You're listening to Jonesy on KBOO Portland. Jonesy has a cold today, and it appears to be contagious, so we're rebroadcasting a favorite episode from last year. It's an interview with Keisha Ajose Fisher, author of the story collection No God Like the Mother from Portland's Forest Avenue Press. Keisha was my first interview in the KBOO studio since the start of the COVID pandemic, a very welcome change after Zooming with guests for 3 years. Keisha radiates energy, wisdom, and compassion, and it was a joyful experience for me just being in the same room with her. Before we get started, though, a reminder that KBOO Spring Membership Drive kicked off a few days ago. We're trying to raise $60,000 before the end of May, and we can use your help. KBOO was founded on a shoestring and a prayer back in 1968, and over 55 years later, we're still here, though on a slightly bigger shoestring. One thing hasn't changed in all that time. KBOO began and continues as true listener-sponsored community radio. We get 80% of our funding from our members, and you can support programs like this and independent media by becoming a member today or renewing your membership or even a one-time contribution. It's quick, simple, and secure. Just go online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Now, hear from April 2023, a rebroadcast of our conversation with Keisha Ajose Fisher. Good morning, and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation, by the way. On today's episode, we welcome Keisha Ajose Fisher, author of the story collection No God Like the Mother, from Portland's Forest Avenue Press. Keisha was born in Chicago, raised in Lagos, Nigeria, and returned to the U.S. with her family in the early 90s. She's an Oregon Literary Fellow, and her work has appeared in The Alchemy, The Phoenix, and The Buckman Journal. Keisha's story, Mr. Uncle's Favor, was included in the 2021 anthology Dispatches from Anaris, Tales in Tribute to Ursula K. Le Guin. The story behind No God Like the Mother almost reads like fiction. The book was originally self-published in 2019 through Inkwater Press and won the prestigious Oregon Book Awards Ken Kesey Prize for Fiction the next year. Inkwater went out of business during the COVID epidemic, and the book went out of print. It was recently republished in a new edition by Laura Stanfill and Forest Avenue Press and is now widely available wherever good books are sold. Author Omar El Akkad, who won the 2022 Ken Kesey Prize, calls No God Like the Mother the sort of story collection that comes along very rarely, honest, precise, and meticulous in its emotional and physical detail. Keisha Ajose Fisher is a brilliant new talent, and No God Like the Mother, the beginning of an equally brilliant literary career. Please join us for our conversation with Keisha, which is already in progress. Well, Keisha, thanks for joining us today live in the KBOO studios. It's my first time back in this room since COVID hit back in March 2020, so I'm so thankful to be here with you.
Thank you, Ken. I'm thankful that I get to be your first guest back in the building. I'll take it, yes,
if anyone asks. Well, I saw you at your Powell's launch, and I figured, I got to interview her in person if I could make it happen.
Thank you, Ken. I was really quite nervous, so I'm surprised that you wanted to talk to me again after that evening. But it was a lovely night.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little, but okay. I want to start first with the origin of the book.
Okay.
So we mentioned COVID. No God Like the Mother was released about a year before the pandemic hit in June 2019.
Yes.
And you self-published the book with a Portland-based Inkwater Press, which sadly went out of business during the quarantine. Why did you go with Inkwater at the time?
So we just moved into my neighborhood, and there was a parade, the Multnomah Days Parade. And, you know, we took the children in, were walking around eating ice cream or something. I don't know. There was a booth by Inkwater. And there was this man, you know, redheaded guy, Sean was his name. And he waved at us and said, come on by and say hello. And my husband said, oh, they publish books. Because I've always written. I've known him for 20 years. I've always been
You were writing in
dreaming.
High school.
I've been writing since high school. But my dream of wanting to become an author or do it for a living was something that my husband Kevin knew. And so when we saw this booth, he said, let's go over there and talk to them. I said, no, thank you. I am not ready. And you know, and a lot of writers say this, no one sees my work until I'm ready. And I was far from being ready. We ignored them then. We didn't go over. And we were at another festival not long after that, that same summer, this time in Southeast.
Inkwater back?
Yes. And we're walking.
It's a sign, huh?
Yes. And my husband said, do you remember seeing them at the other, at the parade, the Multnomah Days Parade? I'm sure I tugged him along by the elbow and said, no, let's go. I'm not talking to them. It's not ready. And you wouldn't believe it. We saw them a third time that summer somewhere else, and I forget where. And Kevin said, I'm just going to get their card. Let's just go over, say hello, grab a card, and you can decide what you want to do later on. And that doesn't hurt, right? I took it when the newspaper, Southwest Multnomah, I'm going to get this wrong.
Oh,
the
it's
Gazette
a local,
or something, a local newspaper,
local,
right, the neighborhood paper came out. My daughter was on the back page getting her face painted, and I'm sifting through it, and of course I'm excited that my daughter is on the back page, so we go buy 10, 20 copies because we want to give all these copies away to people. Look at my daughter on the back page of our neighborhood newspaper. We were feeling like we were a part of this community now. And a couple of pages before I get to my daughter's page is a huge ad for Inkwater, or again.
You're getting the message by
right.
this time, I think.
And I just thought, I need to, the universe is trying to tell me something. This is what I always say. You know, I tell my children the same thing. When something comes to you a few times, the universe is talking to you. And so I thought I would give them a call. But I, you know, we don't call anyone these days anymore, right? We email.
Yeah, or text.
If my phone rings or someone calls me, I don't answer it unless it's, you know, I have three people that I answer for. My sister, my children, my husband. And maybe Oprah. If Oprah's name yes. shows up.
Oprah, if you're listening.
I will
Keisha will take
answer,
your call.
Right. Anyway, I emailed them. And then I hadn't gotten a response yet. But my husband and I were in a bar in our neighborhood, and the acquisitions person for Inkwater comes in, has a couple of drinks at the booth across from us, and says, I know you. And my husband says, yes, you do know us. She's written this book, and she needs it out in the world.
You had met him before then?
He was at
one of the booths?
At one of the booths,
okay.
Right. So he was the redhead who we saw.
Oh, the redhead,
the
okay.
Yes. And he said, reach out to me. I said, okay. I said, I emailed someone, but I will reach out to you directly. And I took a meeting, or he took a meeting, thankfully. And I brought the work into Sean Jones, actually.
There's a lot of
who
us.
You don't know. Right. Yeah. Hopefully you don't know him. No, great guy in the neighborhood. And I had the conversation about what it'll all entail, right? It costs money to self-publish your work. I assumed that they would send me out running when they got the work. But I left it with them, and I was told to just wait. They'll pass it on to the editor. As I was telling some people yesterday, this was a really pivotal time in the process or the growth of this book. Having an editor on my side for the first time changes everything. But I do remember also being scared, because now, outside of the people who have been in the workshops with me and professors who have helped guide my work over the years, I had someone in the, you know, publishing world looking at it. And if his name is Andrew Durkin, by the way. So if Andrew had said or sent back my work, as I imagined it in my head, with giant X's, bold red X's on my work, I probably would have stopped writing. But I was very fortunate that I got someone with an open heart and an open mind to the kind of stories that I was wanting to tell with No God Like the Mother.
So you didn't even try to get it published with, say, a big commercial press?
It happened to work, exactly. Ah. So when I'm talking to people about self-publishing, I will reminding myself that what has happened to me isn't really how it happens to everyone. You know, I call it luck meeting, you know, opportunity meeting preparedness.
But it's an inspirational story.
I hope it lands well for someone out there who is sitting in their office like I used to, panicked about the publishing side of things, even though I love the process of writing so much. I'm doing my most favorite or favoritest thing. I don't know which one is it. English is hard for me. But I'm enjoying myself in a solitary space, of course, but I'm writing. And it feels good to create stories and feel from the stories that I've created, right?
And you've got it out there so other people can read. I want Keisha to get to the next part of this amazing story, and that's, again, self-published through Inkwater, mm-hmm. but the power of the work won out. No God Like the Mother earned an Oregon Book Award, the 2020 Ken Kesey Award for Fiction, which is pretty prestigious. You beat out a strong group that year. Kimberly King Parsons, who I interviewed, Peter Rock, who's at Reed here, Karen Thompson Walker, and Gabriel Urza. That must have been a big boost, both for you and the book.
Listen, what were they thinking? Right?
I think they were thinking correctly.
thank you so much, Ken. I'm sure I fainted a few times when I heard that I was a finalist. I've said this before. I was happy there. I was content with how far the work had gone. I didn't even need to write anything else. I probably would, but now I'm more confident, of course, thanks to the success of the book. But for all of these amazing, talented, you know, I call them the gatekeepers, but for trusting in my work, I know that I didn't tell easy stories, and I jumped out there as essentially, I am an unknown. No one knows me. No one knows Keisha, Jessica Fisher.
Well, they do now.
Well, I hope that I earn this position that I've been placed in. I'm so grateful that they saw my work for what it was.
Yeah, well, one of those gatekeepers I want to talk about too, Laura Stanfill,
yes.
Portland's Forest Avenue Press. It's celebrating its 10th anniversary, by the way.
Absolutely. Congratulations. We're lucky to have them in our town.
Oh, we are. Mm-hmm. She plays such an important role in our literary community here in Oregon, Pacific Northwest entirely. Mm-hmm. And she's incredibly kind and generous. Mm-hmm. How did you and Laura connect and put out this new edition of the book?
You know, I will, again, that spark in out of no place. And it goes back to Inkwater, by the way. My editor, Andrew Durkin, was at an event or something, and I guess Laura was also there. And what I love about the literary community in this town is people speak up for each other. They're very supportive. We all want to see our colleagues do well. Everyone has your back. I will say that about Portland, Oregon, until the end of my times. And they must have had a conversation at this event. I don't know what it was, but I got an email from Andrew saying, oh, I met Laura. And then I got an email from Laura sometime later. I met Andrew, who was your editor, and, you know, do you mind taking a meeting with me? And we just met to talk because we're close by in my neighborhood. And at the time, I couldn't get the copies of this book out because Inkwater had closed. And I was talking to Laura about what my options were because I was going to the LA Times Book Festival and I needed copies of this book and I didn't have any. And we thought we would do a print.
Print on demand.
Right, yes. But then Laura and I had a conversation that just blows my mind still. And she said, well, you know, I think this book deserves to be out in the world still. I would love to talk to your agent. Let's figure out how to, you know, bring it back to life. she didn't see my tears, but they were welling up behind my skull. And as soon as I got home, as soon as I shut the front door, I'm sure I collapsed in tears because I could not believe that this book that by chance won this award and then suddenly wasn't available. I mean, my life changed. I was getting calls from people I never, you know, that I'd only seen on screen. I'd read their work and I was having a conversation with Yaa Gyasi. And
oh, yes, you recommended her work last night.
I was suddenly invited to have a conversation, you know, with Colson Whitehead. I could not believe what was happening. I did not deserve to be in that room, I'll tell you now, but I was still grateful. Thank you so much, Literary Arts, for making that a possibility in my life. I will remember it forever.
And Laura,
yes. And it opened doors for me in ways that I wasn't expecting.
You're listening to Jonesy on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, we're talking with Keisha Ajose Fisher, author of the story collection No God Like the Mother, from Portland's Forest Avenue Press.
Of course, I now had an agent. And that's another funny story, but I acquired an agent after I'd won this award. So all the stories, I did everything backwards. I did it all wrong, and somehow it still worked. So I don't know that I could have any leg to stand on with my children when I urge them to do only the right things. Do it the way you're told to do it, and your life will be fine. And I broke all the rules and somehow still got to this place that I never dreamed of.
Again, I think it's the power of the work. So I'd like to get to the book.
Yes,
there are 9 stories in No God Like the Mother. So each features a girl or a woman, most of whom are African. Many of the stories are set in Africa, mostly Lagos, Nigeria. But there's one story that takes place in Sudan, mm-hmm. A very sad one, mm-hmm. and a few in the U.S., Chicago, the Bay Area, mm-hmm. Portland. And that reflects your own experience. Born in Chicago, raised in Nigeria, moved to the Bay Area to live with your aunt, and now Portland. That's a lot of culture shock. What was it like to go from the U.S. to Nigeria and back, and certainly at a young age?
You know, I blame this odd, bizarre accent that I have, right? It shifts. It's all over the place.
It's a blend, a mix.
Yes. Of every place I've lived. Nigeria, I mean, I grew up with an American mother, and so living in a house with that accent, of course the children had some version of it, because this is our first teacher, this is, you know, who raised us. But then the more I traveled, you know, my first American experience is in Texas. And so that was...
Wow, what an interesting place to have your first experience here. That's like a whole different country.
It is exactly like a different country. And it's got its own language, and it just, you know, deserves to be on its own island somewhere. I know some people would love that, right? But it felt like I was suddenly dropped on a different planet. And I'm sure that affected the way I saw the world, because I was only 12 years old at the time. Then a couple of years later, I decided that I could not live in Texas. I love Texas for your food and the people now. But I left 2 years in to live with an aunt in California. And, you know, those were my formative years, right? Every experience shows up in this book really based on all of the places that life led me to. That my Nigerian upbringing, it'll never leave me. I was, you know, 1 to 11 while I lived there, but somehow it's still showing up as if, you know, I just landed in the States last week. And of course, my time in the States, I have to write about that as well. But it's all of those experiences put together. I wanted to showcase it in a very unique perspective. Thank you.
And that throws through. We can't, of course, cover all 9 stories here, but
sure.
I'd like to talk about a few.
Yes.
The very first in the book is the title story, mm-hmm. No God Like the Mother. And I was amazed. In just 10 pages, you introduced several of the themes in the collection. So mothers and daughters, mm-hmm. birth and death, mm-hmm. endurance and love in the face of great hardship. The story's told so well and concisely and reads almost like a myth or a fairy tale. It takes place in Nigeria among the Yoruba people. And you mention a Yoruba god, Olorun. Keeper of the sky. Was it influenced, the story, by Yoruba mythology? Maybe the stories you were told growing up in Nigeria?
Of course. I was saying the other day at a different interview that we didn't have a lot of television time when we were kids. It came on at 5 p.m. and was all of the television stations, they shut off at 9 or 10. So we didn't rely on television for entertainment. It was, you know, the radio or reading a ton or just our imaginations. And, you know, I like to credit, you know, we have a lot of talented Nigerian authors in the world right now. And I say it's because we, as children, had to rely on our imaginations for play. And you tend to go to various places. And my dad had an encyclopedia collection. And I would read that for entertainment.
I had one of those as a kid, too.
Really?
We had the World Book.
Really?
Did you have Encyclopedia Britannica or the World Book or something like
you
that?
You know, my memory is not the best, as I've said. I will ask my dad and get back to you. But his bookshelf had just alphabetically the encyclopedia. And I would just I remember starting at A and just going through it. And B and going through it. And all of the just...
You did it in alphabetical
I
order.
I did, because that's how my mind works. I didn't know that I was allowed to zip to Z. Right? But I, in that time, acquired lots of just... you know, useless information. And it only really comes into play when I'm watching Jeopardy with my husband. And he'll say, well, how do you know that one thing, but you can't remember, you know, what we had for dinner yesterday? So it's all of the stored information from requiring my imagination to entertain me.
Because you didn't have, you know, 24-hour digital like
exactly,
like,
as
like
our
we
children
do today.
Have now. Yeah, yeah, I didn't have. And, you know, we didn't have a ton of money. So it's not like we had toys to play with either. We made toys. You know, what's that game? The
Legos,
Jax,
or...
I think.
Oh,
what's it?
Oh, okay.
The American, you throw the Jax and marbles, or I don't know.
Oh, there's marbles and Jax.
Yes.
Yeah, two different games.
Two different games. Okay. Anyway.
So the Yoruba myths, though, was also something that you kind of learned from? And
we learned that from all of the elders and the storytelling. At gatherings at grandmother's house or wherever, someone would, at the end of the evening, I remember especially on New Year's Eve, someone would just stand up and start just singing and storytelling, and everyone listened. It's like it was an imaginary button pushed, and we'd pause and listen to them tell stories. And that's probably where that comes from. I enjoyed it, of course. It's, of course, a form of entertainment, but I didn't realize how much it latched onto my understanding of the way the world works and storytelling, and
yes,
how it would show up down the line.
Masterful storytelling.
Thank you.
Especially that first one. But at the Powell's event, someone asked you, what's your favorite story in the book? Mm. And you said The Silence Between Us.
The Silence Between Us.
Which you described as a love story that begins in violence, which doesn't really do it justice.
No.
But it's also a story of love persisting despite differences in class, wealth, and distance. And I think the only story in the book that ends somewhat happily, though ambiguously, why is this one your favorite?
I love the idea of possibilities being so unreachable, untouchable, but we still hang on to that hope, right? I've always believed that I could tell a story or write a full book and have it out in the world and doing well. I dreamed it. I didn't think it was possible, but I still wanted it. So I think in telling that story, it's, you know, this couple who, in all realities, right, they can never be together. But that love growing from when they were youths and finding each other again as adults and knowing that their lives have been pushed apart so far that they'll never come back to where they were, just, you know, is my wacky way of sharing what a love story looks like to me or makes sense in my head. But it really is, I think, that possibility of hope still leading everything was my reasoning behind the story.
I think you also said that the title of this story, The Silence Between Us, was the original title of the book, but of course you changed it to No God Like the Mother. What was the reason? It just seemed to encapsulate the stories in the book better?
I think so.
New title?
I think that the newest title, No God Like the Mother.
The current title.
Definitely, right. The newest. We haven't changed it.
The
it's
only
still the same.
Title. That,
the only,
since
right.
It's been published.
yes, it definitely encapsulates the fullness of the stories in the book. When I wanted it to be The Silence Between Us, I was writing, or the stories were written with the sense that the relationships that we have with our mothers, our fathers, friends, spouses, there's always some underlying quiet, right? We'll never quite know each other, right? I can't know you fully, Ken. You'll never know me.
Or my wife, who I've been with for 46 years.
Absolutely. These children that I grew with my own body and birth and have raised,
yes.
I will never know them fully. There's always that layer of quiet, of silence, that we are not allowed to bridge as human beings, no matter how close we get.
There's an inner life we don't have access to.
We don't have access to it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, touch onto that. So thank you for asking. No one ever asked about that.
The title?
Yes. Well, they ask about the title, but whenever I've said I intended to use The Silence Between Us, they never ask, well, why? So, yeah.
Both of them are good, but I think No God Like the Mother just kind of rings a little truer.
Yes.
It just sounds a little different to me.
Yeah. Unique. And, it's also based on a phrase I grew up hearing, and I'm lucky that I get to have it on
the Yorba translation in here.
Yes, I get to have that on the cover Yorba. This time.
Yes.
When I was self-publishing and had to pay for every word, I couldn't. And now it's on the publisher's dime. I got to put it on, thankfully. Orisha, bi ya kosi, was a phrase I heard growing up. And not really knowing, the meaning behind it, Orisha is another word for God. You'd asked about Olorun. That's what we call God, the God that, if we're naming one or presenting one name to a God.
It's kind of the primary God in Yoruba.
Yes, right.
But there are several others.
Yes. And I remember hearing that phrase when I was young and wondering, why would anyone compare mothers to God? Because I was a child. I didn't know exactly how much my mother was doing behind the scenes, why we're surviving day after day.
And yet we wouldn't be here without our mothers.
We wouldn't be here without our
mothers.
They're
very godlike in that respect.
Absolutely. And I do remember hearing someone say, you love God so much, but you disrespect your mother. Don't you know there's no God greater than your mother? It was that thing, that moment that stuck in my head all of these years. Swept back up when I was writing. I didn't know that I was going to write stories about mothers and our relationships with them until I lost mine in 2014. And before that, I'd been working on a story about her and some of her friends in the 70s who were Americans who went to live in Nigeria and were young girls from Chicago who never really dreamt about anything bigger than Chicago, somehow found themselves in Africa. All black women starting lives out. And that's the story I wanted to tell initially. That'll be the next book. First in their families to go back to Africa since the slave trade. Definitely weren't telling.
Well, Keisha, when you hosted the Oregon Book Awards last year, and that was the first time back live since the pandemic, I think at the Armory here in Portland, you said to the finalists, you are here in this moment because you followed your dreams.
Do you see how the dreams keep coming?
We get to sit with you as observers of the beautiful art you created, but we are most fortunate to be witnesses as you watch your dreams touch people because you dared to chase them.
Oh.
So I want to thank you for talking with us today and thank you for chasing your dreams.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. Please follow your dreams. It didn't come to you for no reason.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it if we had one, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guest today, Keisha Ajose-Fisher, author of the story collection No God Like the Mother, from Portland's Forest Avenue Press. You can learn more about Keisha, her work, and her upcoming events online at KeishaAjoseFisher.com. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, May 11th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying
Orisha, be ya kosi.